T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
All my wolves begin to howl, wake me up, the time is now. Whoa, can you hear the drumming? Whoa, there's a revolution coming. Wild things that turn.
Well, good afternoon. This was a little different. Press conference right off the bat. Governor out of the way, the president not till 5, and he may not start till 5:30 or 6. This is beautiful. We've got some open time. What's on your mind about this mess? I've reached this point where I've gotten impatient. It happened to me today. Like, I'm just frustrated being, it's not even stuck to home. I've been going to the market. I've been going out a little bit. I've been going for walks. But there's a closing in of the world that happens on you. I'm not complaining. I'm analyzing and want to see if you have similar responses to this. It feels like a big part of energy, the energy that drives us through every day, has been taken away from us. It's very weird, the situation we're in, to have no traffic on the roads, a lot of things not open. You know, it's a same old stuff you've been thinking about. I just wanted to see what's on your mind. If you could prioritize and bring back certain things, what would be number one on your list? If you think that our society is going to be permanently changed by this, I'd like to know how you think it's going to be changed. To me, there's no way you go through all this and there aren't huge changes. But culturally, I wonder what the biggest thing will be. Will schools not go back in the same way once they get the groove on online learning? Will workplaces change and just tell people to stay away? Will we have a tail on this thing where for years people are uncomfortable? I mean, maybe restaurants and coffee shops and ice cream shops, places like that, maybe they're going to be fewer of them moving forward because people aren't comfortable going out and being in public. Will people not hug anymore or kiss to say hello? What do you think is going to be the big repercussion? Will there be huge bankruptcies? The state of Connecticut was on the verge financially before this happened. The governor was telling stories about the state's finances during the press conference about how good they are. But the state's in disastrous condition. It was in disastrous condition. What have we been talking about the last couple of years? Before this happened, it was in fiscal crisis. And that the governor would want to cover that up all of a sudden is kind of weird, because he confessed to that during the campaign and even after. He just didn't connect it up accurately to a mission, to what the problem was, what needed to be done about it, and then an agenda item on his agenda. But he admitted, he used the word crisis when he talked about the state's finances. 860-522-WTIC. Let's talk. What's on your mind? What's the latest viral thing on your mind? Anne, hello there.
Hi, how are you? I know.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
That's all right.
I heard the governor's talk, and I was hoping that he would address an issue that I haven't really heard too much about. Mm-hmm. I'm a critical care nurse taking care of active patients that have COVID, and I have two young children at home. So I don't want to go home to them. and expose them to anything that I've potentially been exposed to. I've called hotels to see if they have any options to stay. They said they could give me, you know, a family and friends rate for $100 a night. But, you know, you have to quarantine for at least, you know, a couple of weeks. And so I didn't know if anyone had any information on that.
Well, that's a good question. I know there was some talk, wasn't there, of using hotel rooms for, I think that was for first responders in Fairfield County, maybe?
I'm in Hartford, so there's nothing around here. And I don't know, you know, who to reach out to, or I know a lot of nurses probably, and not just nurses, but all feel the same way. You know, they don't want to go home and expose their family to things that they've been exposed to.
Yeah. Well, have you talked to other people at work about what they're doing about that?
Well, I've been calling a lot of places and kind of been talking about
it,
but I know that's a big concern for a lot of staff.
No, it's a really interesting problem, and I've heard a lot of stories from people in similar situations, not necessarily nurses, but some of them nurses. But if you're doing anything on the front lines with the virus, you're in that situation. Chris Cuomo, the CNN guy, I saw him on TV because he's got the virus, and he was they were doing an interview with him, and he was in hiding so he wouldn't infect his family. And,
right.
And,
well, you need places to hide. I can't hide in my car, you know.
Right. So what have you been doing? How are you keeping your kids safe?
Well, I am going into work this weekend. And so, you know, I almost, you know, not that I don't want it. It's kind of, I don't know what to do. So I have until Friday to find something. And I mean, if I have to pay for a hotel room or I don't know. I don't know. So that's why I'm calling to see if anyone had any information.
All right, we'll put out an APB on that. Do you have a have you talked to your employer?
I have, but they're kind of all tied up with trying to figure out what's coming down the road. So I think that's in one of the burners, but nothing's been decided.
Well, the big thing on coming down the road for them is if they have sick workers, then how do they maintain the flow of things? And how about, do you have a union or are you unionized?
No, we're not. No.
Okay.
No.
And have you called the governor's office?
No, I have not. I've just called hotels and some colleges, and I wouldn't really know how to call the governor, but.
Well, you just call I don't know. I should be able to find his number fairly easily. Let me see if I can find it for you, and I'll give it out over the air, okay?
But
the governor's. The governor's got a phone number at the office, and you can call there, and somebody picks up often, or you can leave a message. But this is the kind of thing that, for all their talk, that there should be something to deal with. And maybe there is, so I don't want to criticize them prematurely. But I suspect they don't have this figured out, because there is a lot coming down everybody's pike, Ann.
I talked to a gentleman from a hotel in downtown Hartford this morning, one of the managers, and their website states that they are supporting, you know, medical staff. And he said, well, they've been talking about it. And he said they have a whole hotel of empty rooms. And that's the guy who offered me, you know, the friends and family rate. So I'm like, well, I can't pay $100 and, then go to work.
Can you do me a favor? Would you give Mike, if I put you on hold and Mike, would you give him, my producer Mike, give him your contact information, because I have an idea for you?
Absolutely.
Okay. That's awesome. I'm going to put you on hold right now. Talk to Mike. Mike, just grab her phone number and email, whatever she wants to give, because I want to see if we can find her someplace to put her up. 860-522-9842. We'll take a quick break. Mike, can we do the break while you do that? And we'll continue on WTIC. KWTIC. Anybody have any ideas for Ann? So, Ann, I got an email. Somebody said that the city of Hartford, let me just find this. City of Hartford is working with the University of Hartford to free up dorms for first responders, cops, and others who are concerned about infecting their families. So there might be something there. I'm going to text the mayor and see if we can get him to come on, and if he's got something to share with us. Or maybe he'll just text me back some information. But we'll find something for you, and I have a feeling. 860-522-9842. We go to Arnold in Enfield. Hi, Arnold.
Hi, Todd. I was wondering if you had heard about Pastor Will didn't know about anything about it until I told him at 11:30. Looked it up. There's been 11 deaths at the Holyoke Soldiers Home, which is a VA facility up in Holyoke, Mass.
Yes, and I heard the call. I heard when you called Will this morning.
Yeah, they put the bodies in a refrigerated truck and left them out back for 6 days.
Yep.
But the reason that's a cover-up, Richie Neal's involved in that, and the guy that running it, Bennett Walsh, is Kateri Walsh's son out of Springfield. She's a big wheel in the Democratic Party in Springfield. So, but, I mean, it's a terrible thing to do to people, throw them in a refrigerated truck and try to hide it.
So it was hidden for a while? Is that what you're saying? Because yesterday the news broke on it, I think.
Now there's more people infected, and there's 5 state employees infected, too. But you don't see it on any news anywhere, so it's a big cover-up.
Well, it's in the news now. I saw it yesterday, I think. But the but it was quiet for a while, so I am curious why. Thank you for the call, sir. 860-522-9842, Jay calling from Hartford. Hi, Jay.
Todd, how are you? Listen, I was on the phone with you yesterday, and I suggested that this was a terrorist attack from our own government, and you said, mm-hmm. Well, where's the evidence? I think the evidence is beginning to – there's no physical evidence, but the evidence is beginning to make itself clear in the way the media is handling this and the way so many people are handling this thing.
Okay.
The contradictions, the overstepping, but the loss of personal freedoms, that certainly – what's the problem with a man and a woman walking through a state park holding hands? I mean, to me, this is – people need to wake up, and I think the people need to realize that the United States is under attack right here. And I know most people don't agree with me. You know, I know that. But I understand what's happening. And this virus may be very real, but – the reactions to it are over the top. We had, so far this year, I don't know if you heard Rush's show, but 113,000 people worldwide have died from the common flu and only 21 from the coronavirus. So how can you explain these draconian measures? I think, Todd, maybe you're, I've been listening to you. I think you're starting to see some of the holes in the story.
Well, there have always been holes in the story. And, one of the problems with conspiracy theories is that they ignore.
Can I explain? It's not a conspiracy theory. This is what I call the cycles of history. So free people gain independence through revolution, and then over time, the corruption, digs in.
Yes, but you're specifically saying that the response to the virus is being controlled by a deliberate desire to take things away from us.
That's
rather
correct.
Than
correct.
Other possibilities. You just ignore other possibilities that seem to me at least as reasonable to propose with no evidence. If you're just going to make things up and say the evidence is we're losing our rights, you can have 1,000 theories as to why we're losing our rights.
Yeah. Well, listen, the Robert Mueller thing didn't work, and so this was the next step in the playbook. And I know it's true. And I think more people will agree with me as time goes on. It's hard for me to convince a lot of people right now because people are scared.
I know, because you have nothing upon which to base what you're – it's just a theory with and I'm not saying it's not possible, but to say that you know what you think is the case indicates that maybe you're not open enough to reasonable thinking. Wilson in Hartford, hi.
Hi, yes, yeah, Wilson speaking. Hey, I have a good question for you, and maybe somebody in the expert field can elaborate about it. And the question is, do we have to worry about mosquitoes this season passing the COVID-19 disease?
Well, nobody's mentioned anything about mosquitoes. It's an interesting question, but I assume not because I believe that mosquito-borne illnesses are very specific things. It's not random. But we'll see. It's interesting because they do take your blood, and then they go and bite somebody else. So you would think that that would be a way it could communicate. But I don't know why everything doesn't communicate that way. I'll see what I can find out for you, Wilson. Thank you for the call. All right, somebody sent me an article, a guy named Todd, if you can imagine, saying that the mosquitoes make a lot of people sick, but no evidence to suggest that this particular virus, that will happen. So I'd be partially concerned, but not that far. Because as time goes on, we find out a lot of these assumptions aren't true. But thus far, there's no reason to believe that mosquitoes will be spreading this virus. Wes in Glastonbury, hi.
Hi, Todd. One problem we have is rubber gloves. People are uneducated on how this stuff works. If you touch a surface that has coronavirus on it, you're going to still be touching a bunch of other stuff and eventually take your gloves off anyway. You're really not helping at all.
Well, wait a sec. If you take the gloves off and throw them away without making contact with the outside surface that would have the virus on it, aren't you protecting yourself?
A lot of people think that, but they aren't. Like, how many people are carrying a wallet or a purse while wearing the gloves? You're still going to be having that in your house and taking your stuff out of your purse eventually.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. So a lot of people do put the gloves on and leave them on for a long time. And what you're saying is if you've got the virus in the house, the fact that your hands are protected doesn't mean you're not going to transmit it all over the place and get it into your system.
Or even bring it to other places where you know, in public.
Yeah, so the key to wearing gloves and having them be helpful is that you have to be changing them constantly, right?
Exactly, and it's almost pointless to be wearing them right now. The goal is don't touch anything or stay at home.
Yeah, but say you're at the supermarket, you have to buy food. Having gloves on protects you from first-hand contact, perhaps.
I would say yes and no, but again, don't touch anything. Just stay home. It's pretty simple.
Well, sometimes you have to get some food. You have to eat. Lewis in Hartford, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you for the call, sir.
Yes. I'm an embalmer. I'm a funeral director.
Okay.
Our personal protection gear that we need to do our job is reappropriated.
It's being diverted away from you?
Yes. You know,
who's taking
I'm
it?
I'm talking about the industry in itself. Not me personally, but the industry. We're not even thought of. They're talking about you call your supplier and ask for a PPE set. They're talking about getting it to us in May, May 20th, May 30th.
And are you all out already?
No, I'm not completely out yet, you know, but I would imagine within a week I'll be out. And you can't get any from anywhere.
Yeah, I know. I assume it's not coming in from overseas, Lewis. Sorry, I'm out of time for this segment, but I assume it's just not making it here from overseas. They're keeping it for themselves. WTIC. Let's give Lewis a chance to finish up. Hey there.
Okay, hi. How are you?
Sorry about the interruption. So what else do you want us to know about your supply issues?
Well, we're facing... The nation is facing 100,000 to 200,000 deaths in the next couple of weeks. This is what it said. What is supposed to happen to these deceased? They tell us that the virus lives hours, sometimes days after death.
Yep.
How are we supposed to protect the public and ourselves?
And is this a problem that funeral directors that you routinely have? What do you use for protective clothing normally? Is this a whole different scheme?
We use the same thing that the hospitals use. the exact same gear.
Every day or in a situation like this?
Every time you go in there with a deceit in the room, that's what you use.
Really?
You use the face mask, the N95 mask, a gown, a water-resistant gown, boots, and gloves. Every single time.
And how much is, what's the total cost per person that you're, I'm not sure what you refer to them as, but per body that you're treating, what is the total cost of the outfit you need?
The total cost of the outfit, depending on which ones you get, and of course, you know.
Well, just give me a ballpark.
$96 a pop.
Okay, so $100 a pop. That's a lot of money. So you're not likely to have an extra 20 or 30 of them in a closet.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
One of these firms is doing 400 or 500 cases a year. You know, you may have 25 or 30 of them in there, but it's a regular, it's a constant order.
Who have you reached out to for help on this? Anybody?
Our suppliers. We call the Department of Health. They told us that, you know, you can ask the ME's office, the medical examiner's office. The medical examiner's office says they have none. You know, the funeral director and the embalmer is the last person that anybody even thinks about.
Well, that's how your lot in life goes. You're a behind-the-scenes kind of guy.
Right. But we are a healthcare provider. You see, like, if people will, it is sad to say, will pass at home. And we have to go and pick them up.
Yeah. No, it's totally understandable, your point. It's just one of those things people don't think about. So if I want to see if we can help you, too. So if I can put you on hold and you can give Mike contact information, then he'll give it to me, and I'll be able to follow up with you if I can learn
thank
any
you so
solution
very much.
For you, okay? Yeah, thank you for calling, Lewis. It's an interesting situation. Lewis is a funeral director. He says all of their supplies get diverted, which I assume is happening to everybody. And I would guess the stuff just isn't coming to the country because the Chinese are keeping it all for themselves, which is one of the reasons why we have to adjust the supply chain, don't we? 860-522-9842, Mike in Hamden. Hi, Mike.
How you doing?
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, you there?
Go ahead. I'm talking to you. What do you mean, am I here?
Okay, I'm calling in regards to Governor Lamont's press conferences about the aerospace companies following all these rules and whatnot. I work for the one in East Hartford, which is everybody can guess which one it is. And
wait, hold on a sec. Hold on a sec. What rules was the governor commenting on? What did he say?
Well, he was saying, for instance, taking your temperature as they're coming through the door, practicing social distancing. You cannot practice it in there because the cells are set up to where you're working right next to everybody, back to back with everybody. And we've already had two cases already confirmed. And there's more people that have been sent home. And we're required to go there and work with no protection at all. And our bosses are encouraging us, oh, please don't, because I understand you can get 80 hours off if you get a doctor's note, which a lot of people are doing because they're afraid they're going to get it. I'm in my mid-60s. I just went and told my boss I'm going to have to seek my doctor. You know what? He came up to me and tried to talk me into staying. I said, my life is more important in this place. That's what it's coming to in there. You don't realize. I don't know what the hell they're telling the media, and I'm not supposed to go to the media. They're telling us not to, but I'm worried about my life. My wife has had cancer, and she's in remission now, and I got to worry about bringing that home to her.
What do you think should happen? What should they be doing?
I think they should at least close down for at least till Easter anyway, and then reassess it at that point. But it would have to come from the governor. I don't know what the governor believes that they're telling them, but you cannot have social distances in that place because everybody works upon each other. And even you find your bosses coming up to you within a foot away from you, and you got to tell them, hey, Back off. It's terrible.
Mike, thank you for sharing that story. It's good to get these perspectives because you're right. When politicians are speaking, they're speaking through rose-colored glasses, and the picture that we get isn't necessarily an accurate one. We know that's how these things roll. So it's good that you let us know. It's the only way we can know. Lewis, the same thing. Fascinating to learn about that issue. And I think we're going to find out that there are a lot more like this. So we will keep an eye, and we will encourage people to call in. 860-522-9842. Okay, so we've got Larry in Bridgeport. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Todd. Hi. Good afternoon. I just wanted to give you a call. Something that I don't know if you'd agree with me on, but it's just something that kind of rubs me the wrong way. I was watching a TV network, local TV network, yesterday, and I saw the CEO of Yale New Haven Hospital on doing a PR stunt about her hospital. Okay? Did a little research. This person's making well over $1 a year. And what rubs me the wrong way is Yale New Haven Hospital has the money to do these ads on TV, and I have family members who work there, CNA, certified nurse and assistants, et cetera. They have to pay for their own parking, and they're making $13, $14 an hour. You know what I'm saying? So they have to pay for their
own parking to go to work. What is paying for? Yeah,
well,
go ahead.
Yale doesn't pay for their parking. So a lot of the medical assistants there, a lot of the people who are lower wage workers, okay, even the nurses have to pay for their own parking. Yale doesn't pay for their parking. So it just annoyed me that here's this person doing a PR stunt, buying TV time during this crisis, and a lot of their workers, they're not even treated properly. They don't even have proper protection. The nurses, a lot of them, are going, taking care of these patients, and they don't even have proper protection. Okay, face masks, gloves.
It's clearly a problem. Everybody is saying they don't have, you know, even the people running the places are saying they don't have the stuff they need to be able to take care of people. So it's an issue.
All I was trying to say is social justice. I'm not a big social justice guy. Never thought about it a lot. But I'm looking.
Larry. All right. I guess I'm having a little computer problems. Because Larry disappeared on me. 860-522-9842. Okay, I guess we have a guest, and Eric Sykes, Quinnipiac. Eric is here to talk about where we're at in the world of college admissions, because as you can imagine, the whole thing is breaking down. How do you admit kids? How do kids graduate from high school? How do they have the qualifications to go to college? How do you, you know, it's just a big dilemma. So Eric Sykes is the VP for enrollment at Quinnipiac. Hello there, Eric. Thank you for joining us on WTIC.
Hello, Todd. How are you?
Thanks for joining us. So what exactly are you guys doing? I don't understand how the whole movement of students is being undermined, isn't it?
No, it's a great question. And, you know, it's quite a challenge this year where we are right now. This is the time of year when most colleges and universities are bringing students to campus. Students have typically narrowed down their choices to two or three. They're visiting campuses. The main question in their mind is this a place that I fit? Right now, there are almost no colleges or universities that are able to do that and really answer that question. And when it comes to making college choice, when it comes to choosing the place that somebody's going to be at for the next 4 years at least, that is something that you really want to spend a lot of time and make the most informed decision that you can. One of the things that Quinnipiac has done, and this is the direction that other colleges are following, is to move their admitted students day into an online format. So we actually had a virtual admitted students day on March 28th. and we had about 9,000 visitors to the site between the Thursday that we opened it and the Saturday when we had our live four-hour event. We had about 1,800 guests, individual unique students that came to the site that have participated in about 3,500 of our online sessions. They asked about 1,600 questions, so there was a lot of information that they were able to gather that way. And we were able to really put out there, answer questions about what student life was like, what the academics were like, whether it was the college level, was it the school level, or the program level. You know, the struggle for institutions is really to give students a sense of what life would be like on campus.
But what's going on now with this flow of kids? How do you even get kids properly qualified when they're not doing their senior years in high school?
Right now, everybody's in the same boat in terms of evaluating how students are performing. And really, when you think about the college admission process, most of the evaluation, I mean, early action for a lot of schools when it comes to accepting students happens in December. So they've already evaluated them for 3.5 years. They get into the second semester of their fourth year, and you just look for continuing grades to make sure that they aren't falling off too significantly. Most institutions now are looking for to make sure that the students are still attending or they're passing. They're getting good reviews from their teachers, but we're definitely in uncharted territory. And so a lot of schools are dealing with exactly the question that you asked. How are we going to assess students in this second term? It's new territory for everyone. And right now, I think we're assuming that as long as the student's on a good trajectory, they've already taken their standardized tests, whether they be SAT, ACT, they've already put in 3.5 years of schoolwork. This semester is certainly an anomaly.
So you're just giving them a pass on the last semester? You're just writing it off and saying you won't?
No, we're still evaluating students in terms of whether or not they pass or fail a class, which is the direction that a lot of high schools are moving, because they're still taking their courses. They're still doing coursework. In a lot of cases, you know, they're doing a couple days a week online as though it was a normal work day. But certainly the rubrics for evaluation have changed a little bit. And for most schools, you know, the majority of schools that are out there, the evaluative piece is already over. This is the point where you're really taking an assessment of their ability to assess you in terms of fit.
Okay, so you don't really have much to worry about then. The virus is disrupting a lot of parts of college life, I assume, but admissions is not bogged down at this point.
No, I would say this is a more difficult part for us is really our ability to present ourselves in front of the students. You know, this is really
because you can't show them the school, you mean?
What's that?
Because you can't show them the school?
Right. Students aren't allowed on campus. So the best option they have are virtual tours. which, you know, doesn't really meet the same.
Doesn't quite give you the feeling, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And like I say, it's for the students, it's all about fit. And part of that fit is visiting the campus and talking to current students, which we can do that virtually, but also visiting the campus with other students that would be like the incoming class that they would be a part of. And that is really the part that's the most difficult for colleges and universities to mimic.
Yeah, I would think so. All right, Eric, thank you for filling us in. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Eric Sykes from Quinnipiac University, the admissions guy there. Tim in Farmington, hi, you're on WTIC.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. I can understand the separation because that's the control of the virus. And I can understand hospitalization because that's saving lives. But in my opinion, until we get a vaccine, nothing's going to happen. And the final question that I have for you for your input is I don't understand how anybody figures out the spike. The spike's been going on, you know, for months. I mean, we're going to spike in middle of April. Now, how does anybody in their right mind know that?
Well, because first of all, they've got the history of what's happened in other countries, how fast it moves. And they've got, so they can take that pattern and plug it in. And then they've got the pattern of what's going on here so far, and they can watch it replicate what they've seen in other communities.
Okay, and I understand what you're saying. I understand it. And we'll see if it does spike. But that's neither.
Well, we will. You know, nobody's saying they're going to be absolutely correct, but they've got a lot of information to go by. Thank you for the call, sir. 860-522-9842. WTIC, good afternoon. We're talking the talk, walking the walk. A lot of interesting calls from people who are caught in the middle in this whole COVID thing. Paul and Cromwell, hi.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for taking my call. I was just interested in throwing this into the conversation that earlier this year up at the LLB in Hartford, the great Taj Mahal, they were having protests about having children that were vaccinated for measles, mumps, and whatever, rubella, whatever it is. It would be amazing that if, say, Pfizer's or another chemical company came out with a vaccine for COVID-19, how many of those people that were protesting that didn't want their kids vaccinated might stand in line and get a vaccination?
It's a very funny situation, isn't it, where the tables have turned and the dynamic looks different. And it's good, you know, for this kind of thing to happen. It keeps everybody more honest.
And obviously, I hope that everybody stays safe, stays home, nobody gets sick and so forth. But obviously, people are dying, and it's tragic. But thank you for having your show, because it's great. Listen to you all the time.
I appreciate it, Paul. Thank you so much for being there. Tom in Enfield. Hi, Tom. Yes, Tom. All right. Tom is gone. Tom was an important call, so I'm disappointed that we didn't get him on the air, because he said we had a caller earlier, Mike, who talked about working in aerospace and how you can't work safely there. They shouldn't be keeping them open because they're on top of each other. And I think we were about to get a contrary opinion to that, but unfortunately we didn't have the chance. Laurel is from Newington. Hi, Laurel.
How you doing?
Thank you for the call.
I think what the gentleman before me was talking about or something, about the people who stormed the Capitol. Their kids can't have vaccines and things. What's going to happen when this vaccine comes out?
Well, they didn't storm the Capitol. They were there to protest and to speak, actually. It was a public hearing.
Yeah. But are they going to protest?
And they're not necessarily against all vaccines. They're against vaccines being forced into the arms of their kids without them having the chance as parents to have a say in that.
I do agree with that. I do. But this one affects everybody. Kids can be carriers that can give it to older people and stuff like that. So I'm not saying who's good, who's right, and who's not, but it's going to be kind of interesting on the turn of events of what happens.
Well, you know, if it's not a loaded topic for you, it won't be that interesting, because obviously each case is a different case, and nobody's saying all vaccines are created equal, except the people who want to pack a dozen of them or whatever, however many they put in a single shot. Those people say they're all created equal. And if they are decreed as required vaccines, then everybody has to take them. They're not all equal. And pretending they are, I think, is the crux of the problem there. 860-522-WTIC. We'll take more phone calls in just a couple minutes. But joining us right now, former State Senator Joe Markley, who is, well, he's been getting bumped by politicians doing press conferences, the worst kind of politician. And I apologize that we couldn't get you on the last couple of weeks, Joe, but it's good to have you here now.
Oh, no, that's perfectly all right. And frankly, you know, Governor Lamont was doing his job, and I just wish he hadn't done it in my time slot, but I'm happy to be here this week. And frankly, I can't say, you know, I don't feel like I'm, what's going on right now is not my area of expertise exactly. So your listeners are probably been well served by what you've had.
it's not anyone who's involved with this, their expertise. Everybody's making it up as they go and learning as they go. But you know a lot about politics, and what I'm curious about has to do with how politics is impacted, because we are not that far away from an election, like 8 months away, and I wonder how it's going to take place. And if it just becomes an election where nobody changes seats because there's so little political activity that nobody's even thinking about it.
Well, that's a concern of mine. And I'm always involved with candidates. I don't do it professionally, but it's a delight for me to help people that I believe in. And I have several candidates around the state that I'm doing my best to support. And obviously, everyone's kind of in limbo. And part of the problem is not simply, let's say, some of the candidates are in the middle of their fundraising. And it's a very difficult time to be saying, oh, by the way, can you write me a check? Obviously the events are all closed down. And there's some folks that running for offices that had some very major fundraising events that were canceled. The good news, of course, is presumably it affects both sides about the same. One of the complications is you just don't know how long it's going to last, whether 3 weeks from now things could be going back to normal, or is it going to be months before people are going to be comfortable going to meetings or events, or having someone knock at their door. And this is going to be one of
so that's the big
too.
And the reason I said what I said, setting this up, that nothing will change in November, maybe, is because challengers have to do different things than what incumbents do, right?
That's exactly right. So you would say that kind of in the tie goes to the runner. If everyone is frozen, that's going to work to the advantage of incumbents. And if you're a Republican who desperately wants to see a change in direction in the state, you're rooting against incumbents on the whole. You want to see some turnover. So that part of it concerns me. You know, there's even been a little bit of a freeze. This is a period where we're still looking for candidates in certain districts. I know that's amazing to people that there's legislative districts where we don't have good legislative districts, winnable districts where we don't have candidates. But that's the case. And the process.
Why is that?
Well, you know, it's always the case. Part of it is I've spent a lot of time over the last 10 years trying to find candidates for the legislature. And I'll go into a district, and you call people you know in the district, you call town committee chairs, you call former legislators, former candidates, and you just try to get leads. And I'll work on it sometimes on and off for several months and come up with somebody. And then people say, well, he's not a very good candidate. I say, I got one candidate. I didn't have a smorgasbord. And part of the problem.
But part of the issue is that they're waiting to see how things develop. They want to have a feeling for what kind of year it's going to be, don't they?
Well, that's always part of it. But part of it is that people don't think of running and they don't want to make a decision. People might think about it. We talked to them back in last fall, and they say, yeah, maybe. And they'll get stuck on maybe for months and months. I really encourage people when they think about it to you know, there's only so much. Sit down with your pad and make the pro and the con list, and you can decide in a matter of a couple of days. Talk to your wife or your husband and decide. The other X factor is Donald Trump and where he's going to be in November. And that is always unpredictable, but that's now unpredictable squared, in my opinion, with this virus.
You mean how strong a candidate he will be, or how much turmoil he'll create nationwide?
Well, I suppose those two things are connected. But how strong a candidate he'll be. And if you're a Republican looking to try to take out a Democratic incumbent, Trump's popularity, the strength of Trump at the top of the ticket could be very helpful. Weakness from Trump at the top of the ticket is going to pull you down. Now, there's Republicans all over the state that have been nervous about Trump all along. But the fact is, 4 years ago, he ran very well in large areas of the state. Here in my area, in Southington, Wolcott, Central Connecticut generally, out in Eastern Connecticut, Naugatuck Valley, not so much in Fairfield County. But he should be helpful to us in a lot of districts we need to win. That said, it's hard to know. It's hard to know because he himself is a disruptor, and also because it's just not clear how this epidemic is going to end up playing in the long run.
All right, hold on, Joe. I just have to do a weather forecast, then we'll continue the conversation. We'll wrap up with former State Senator Joe Markley, and then we'll take more phone calls in just a couple of minutes. All right, Joe, so it's going to be a tough year for challengers. That means a tough year for Republicans to unseat people, even in seats where there might be a Democrat who's vulnerable. Are there any of those?
Oh, yes. First of all, you'd look at the seats that we lost 2 years ago, and a lot of those are pretty good Republican seats. In some cases, have been Republican for a long, long time. So you hope that you can get good candidates in those seats. And again, in some seats, I think we have very strong candidates down to take back Scott Francis' seat down in Greenwich. In other seats, it's still up in the air. And then there's seats that are perennial battlegrounds. I'd take right in your listenership area, the 4th Senatorial District represented by Steve Cassano. And we've got an excellent man, Matt Corey. I think you know him, and a lot of people in the area know him because he ran for the U.S. Senate 2 years ago. He's running for that state Senate seat, and he's a marvelous candidate, a charismatic, outstanding man. But it's no layup. We've run some good candidates there over the years, and we've come close, and we haven't gotten it.
Get surprised where somebody pops up out of the blue and you think they're going to be a lousy candidate and they're spectacular?
You get surprised both ways, Todd. And it's a funny thing to be involved in this. And I always say it's a lot like sports. In that sense, it's like Tom Brady going in the seventh round. You know, sometimes a candidate that has no track record, it turns out to be hardworking, focused, and gets it, has an instinct for campaigning. And sometimes you get somebody who has the great pedigree, who was the head of the Chamber of Commerce and the, you know, president of his class in high school and all this, but just doesn't perform when the moment comes. You never can be sure, and you try to nudge people forward in the best way you can. But one of the things is you look at it as Connecticut needs to change direction, but it comes down to 187 different races in 187 districts, and the dynamics in each are different, and you're dependent on how well each of those candidates does and who he or she surrounds themselves with, if they can find a good campaign team and put them to work properly.
All right, Joe, anything else you want us to know?
Well, stay well, and I will look forward to being back with you next week. And I guess I would say, if you want to see change in this state, find out who's running in your state Senate and your House districts. And if you see a good person there, get in touch with them so you'll be ready to help them when they're back on the campaign trail.
Encourage them, how about?
Encourage, absolutely. Donate if they need it. If you're in the district, even $5 makes a big difference.
Well, there's no encouragement like a little cash in the hand.
Exactly.
Thank you, former State Senator Joe Markley. Good to talk with you once again. We'll see you next week.
Okay, Todd.
Take care. 860-522-9842. And Nita from Watertown. Hi.
Hi, Nita. Hi, Todd. I enjoy your show very much.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah. I just want to let you know that I heard that the governor is talking about probably closing some of the parks. I don't know if they're having problems.
I'm sorry. Oh, closing the parks, yes.
The parks, yes.
Yeah.
I want them to keep in mind that the mental health aspect of people is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And people need to be able to go out and do something, because otherwise people are going to go crazy inside the house. We have grandchildren. I like to go in the park with them. We keep distance. We are informed. We know how to do the right thing. But if they close the park, what am I going to take my grandchildren to the street?
Well, it does seem ridiculous, because parks are big places, and you can be very diligent about making sure that you maintain the separation you're supposed to maintain and still enjoy some time in a park.
That's exactly what I've seen in my area. People are keeping the distance. It just you know, something that we need. So they should be, you know, there's a fine line between overdoing things and keeping a balance. We still have some, you know, liberty, and it should not be totally taken away from us. Because otherwise...
Oh, I love that. That's a great word, that liberty word you used.
Well, it is. It is. Just because we are in war, there's certain things that we still, you know, as human, we still need to enjoy, and our leaders need to understand that and respect that. And we as a citizens, we need to do the right things. We keep in distance. We don't want this, you know, whatever is going on, we don't want this to continue. So we're doing our part, but they need to do their as well.
Nita, thank you so much for calling. Good to hear from you. 860-522-WTIC, Stephen Weathersfield. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Todd. You know, all this negative news, all this depression, we need something to look forward to. We need some hope. And what better thing than the holiday that's coming up in a week and a half, Easter, a sign of hope, rebirth, renewal. We celebrate Christmas by putting up our lights. Let's do the same thing right now. You were talking yesterday, what fun things can people do? Go out there, put the Christmas lights back up. It's a sign of hope. Mm-hmm. It's a sign of encouragement. And that's what we need right now. I never took mine down. I'm lighting them every night on my street.
Are you? That's great.
We need something positive, hopeful, and the Easter season is coming up. And what better way to celebrate it early than putting the lights back up?
Good idea, Steve. Thank you for sharing that. You know, this couple weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, they started doing it in Italy when they were getting the crunch in Italy. And they started going to their windows at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I think it was, and singing. And it was just such a powerful thing that, you know, reflecting the need for people to be connected and the desire to connect in some way, even if there isn't the opportunity to do it in close proximity. 860-522-WTIC. Joe in East Hartford. Hi, Joe.
Yes, sir, Joe. First time caller.
Well, thank you, Joe, for doing that.
Okay. I'd like to start off my statement with what's wrong with this picture. We'll leave it at that. And regarding...
I'm sorry, say it again. You're a little muffled, and I couldn't understand what you were saying.
I'll start off my statement with what's wrong with this picture. I was listening to Lamont's... statements earlier, and it said deals with the motels as far as hospitals go.
Okay,
how many schools are closed in the state of Connecticut? Roughly 1,000?
I don't know the number, but it's a big number.
Okay, well, why couldn't we use those and not have to negotiate money deals with motels?
Well, I think the idea with the motels is they're empty anyway, so the money would be reasonable, and they're all set up and ready to go, and it would assist businesses that are going to need assistance. I think that's the idea. But dormitories are also used for that kind of thing. So if you're talking about schools that have housing, then I believe – so the mayor of Hartford is working with the University of Hartford to try to get rooms for the – for the first responders, and I think they're trying everything.
I was speaking more like elementary and high schools because they're everything's covered in tile and ceramic, easy to clean, easy to sterilize.
Yeah, that's a good idea. The issue is just they're not set up, so they'd be looking for a turnkey thing, I think. Thank you, Joe, for the call. Kim in Middletown, hi.
Yes, I'm going to alert everybody to protest the closing of the outside state parks. Getting back to what the previous caller said about people do need something to do, but it's very important that people get out and get some sunshine because sunshine stimulates the production of vitamin D, which is part of your immune system, particularly your immune system in the respiratory tract. Okay.
Kim, I like it. You've got a tie-in on the specific vitamin. That's great.
I used to teach a lot about things like pandemics and natural disasters inside my first aid classes, and I used to warn people what to do
So you need people to be outside. That's awesome. Sorry, I've got to hold you right there, Kim. Are here because you are what it's all about. 860-522-9842. We're talking all the usual stuff, but it's different every day because every day is different. The topic is the same. The virus controls everything in our country right now and all of our conversation. But there's new information and new ways of looking at it every day as things evolve. So let us let's get to the phones here. Let's talk with Lynn calling from Berlin. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, how are you? Listen, I enjoy
thank you for the call.
Because
thank you for
a
that.
Chance for everybody to vent their opinion.
I like that.
Listen, I'm not sure what I heard the governor say, but if it's what I think he said, I'm not for it. He said that if there's an overflow of kind of a virus patients in Fairfield, that we have plenty of hospitals up here. I'm not for bringing up sick people into an area that's really not infected. If he floods our local hospitals with the people, it'll jeopardize all of us.
Did he say that? Well, I think I've heard him say that, yeah. And I think that's kind of a standard procedure for him because they're, you know, they look at the state and say, how many beds are there in the state? And if there's a shortage in one place, they want to be able to make use of them in the other place. But
well,
certainly your concern about spreading the virus is a legitimate one.
Yeah. I mean, so far it's not bad in our area. Hartford, Meriden, Meriden had a few. But to bring up a whole bunch, I mean, I'm for getting people well and giving them medical treatment. But instead of bringing them up here, he should bring the medical people down there like they're doing.
Well, that's a reasonable plan. I like your thinking on this better.
Yeah.
Maybe than the governor's. I'm sorry, we've got a little delay here, Lynn. Thank you so much for the call. And next we go to John in Burlington. Hi, John.
Hey, a little preamble. I like to say I'm following the guidelines and I'm social distancing and all that. I'm not against
it. Okay.
But I like to quote Ben Franklin. Benjamin Franklin, people willing to trade their freedom for temporary security deserve neither and will lose both. And the reason I make that, I state that.
Well, we don't have that much time. Tell me what your conclusion is, then what's the appropriate way to respond to a deadly virus?
In Louisville, Kentucky, people that have felt ill and have gone to the hospital and have tested positive and have done nothing more than that, the ones that are considered to be low level where they're not showing a lot.
Hold on a sec, John. I'm sorry. I'm short on time. I've got to get to a break, but if you want to hold on, we'll let you finish up. If we can. The president might be speaking, though. TIC, good afternoon, good evening, I guess we say now. And thank you so much every day for being here. So the perplexing moment we've come to is the same one we've been in for a couple of weeks now. It's kind of a Groundhog Day, except that the story takes these little shifts and twists and turns. And we follow, and we keep track. But meanwhile, we have to live inside of it all. Meanwhile, we have to experience it. And maybe, after 2 to 3 weeks now, depending on how early you were in adopting the isolation, the self-isolation, maybe it's starting to get to you. If you have any reactions like that, I'd be interested in hearing. Has it made you a little crazy? Is it starting to? And are you having trouble imagining, what if you have to do this for another month or 2 months or 3 months? And how long do you think it is going to take? Interesting, isn't it? John in Burlington, finish up, sir.
The local government of Louisville, Kentucky, has enacted this. If you felt ill and you went to the hospital and you've been found to be corona positive, but you have very minimal, symptoms, you're told to go home. The government of that particular locality finds those names, issues it to a judge. The judge issues a house arrest to those people. A law enforcement officer is issued to that address.
All right, so what's your point about this, John?
Oh, my point is a law enforcement officer is issued to your address and then is to watch you. And
okay, what's your point, John?
And also attach a GPS bracelet to you.
All right, so and your point is they're overreacting in Louisville, Kentucky. And what's your larger message that's driving? That this whole thing is a scam or
no,
it shouldn't be happening?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying...
Well, say what you're saying, please.
You can't give up your freedoms because you don't want to get sick or some old people might die. What are we doing here?
Well, we're just trying to lay low for a few weeks while the virus passes.
Yeah, but
that doesn't strike me as being the same. No, I'm totally listening. You're not listening to me. You're too filled with anger over this.
You're not listening to what I just told you.
I listened. I heard you. They're doing something they shouldn't be doing in Louisville.
They're sending a law enforcement officer to your house.
Yes, and look how far you have to go, John. John, look how far you have to go to find somebody to object to. Why do you have to pick a state 1,000 miles away to make your point? They can deal with that down there if there's overreach. There's overreach in government every single day that there is government. Government is the most dangerous, ugly force in our lives. You're right. But that doesn't mean that we can't have our government do what the only reason that it's worth putting up with a government at all. We'd be better off without one if we didn't need it for times like these. So if you have to go to Louisville to find the government having done something that's outraging you in response to a deadly virus that's going to peak in a few weeks and life will go back to normal if we're lucky, and maybe it won't, but life goes on. That's how life has always been through the history of mankind. Life has been that there are plagues and there are wars and there are economic downturns and bad stuff happens. That's life. Government, sometimes we need them. That's why we put up with the ugliness and the corruption and the theft and the plunder, because sometimes you need a government. 860-522-9842. Gary in Southwick. Hi, Gary.
Yes, how are you? Yeah, I just wanted to just point out, I mean, with all the pessimism, let's look at something positive. There are approximately 4 million people in Connecticut, and we have, what, 4,000 positive cases at this point? Or maybe it's 7,000 or 8,000. I can't keep up with the projections.
Well, comparing the sick people to the number of people in the state isn't really cogent. It misses the point. The point is really their fear of this thing running wild, like a wildfire, and there being a backup of six sick people needing an ICU bed and that they can't supply. That's what's driving this. Compare the number of potentially sick, so sick that they need a respirator or a ventilator, and compare that to the number of ventilators. That's what this is about.
Yeah, and I get that. But my point is percentage-wise, okay, you know, we're at like 1/10 to 2/10 of a percent of people that have contracted the coronavirus or been proven positive with the coronavirus. And I do totally believe in this, you know, social distancing and all the things that are being done. And I think if we all do it, our odds, the bottom line is our odds of contracting the coronavirus, if we do what they're being suggested to do,
yes,
is real minimal.
Yes, it goes down. Not necessarily minimal, but just because of the lag time where somebody can be, well, it's not just lag time. I mean, there can be people who never show symptoms who are shedding virus, and right, those people could make you sick. People who are sick and don't know it yet can make you sick. So, you know, that's why this is so badly needed, I think, to create a stopgap that's a firewall, I guess, that says we're just going to stop it in its tracks right here.
I totally agree with it. And if we all do our thing, the odds are of you getting the coronavirus, if we all do what we're supposed to do, as a betting guy, you should be able to bet that you won't get it.
If you hope. You hope, except for that, you know, that piece of mail that comes in from the mailman or what have you. You know, it's a virus. It's really easy to catch these things. And the other thing is they're learning as they go. 860-522-9842. And, I don't know. I'm getting impatient with this logic on this. And I use the analogy before, I'll repeat it, that if there is a storm coming up the Gulf Coast that looks just like Katrina, but it hasn't hit yet, it hasn't killed anyone yet, and somebody's saying to you, why are you worried about this storm? It hasn't killed anyone. Well, you know what these storms do. There is history you can look at. It's all visible. And I'm not saying they won't make mistakes in their estimations, and that they won't rob us blind in the solutions that they come up with, because that's what politicians do. But I'm just saying that this is, they need to, as frustrating as it is, they need to be the ones, because somebody's got to be in charge, and they're the ones in those positions. There's got to be somebody who's monitoring this and making it work, the response, doesn't there? And I'm not even saying they're good at it, because, of course, why would they be? But somebody's got to do it, that's all. Are there still a lot of people disagreeing? Mark in West Hartford, hi.
Todd, you're a great listener, so listen to this one. You're gonna find out what a tool Luke Bronin is in the leadership in Hartford. So 2 weeks ago when I was a former first responder, and I know some are infected, nobody's, well, a few cops contracted it. But I presented to reopen, it's 275 Pearl Street was the old headquarters. Todd, it's 33,000 square feet. There's three floors, 11,000 square feet on each floor. If people on one floor that just don't want to go home could stay on one floor, maybe somebody, a possible exposure with no symptoms, could be on another floor. And then, of course, if somebody got infected but they don't have the need of medical attention to the point of where they need hospitalization, could be on another floor. Hartford possesses 300 cots in emergency services. I presented this 2 weeks ago, and they said the place is and it is, it's a dump, but they just shut it down 10 weeks ago. It's still electrified. It still has water. And if it was good enough for a chief and an aide and a fire crew with all their equipment just 10 weeks ago, why are you taking, and this is the one that gets me, they're taking a survey amongst cops and firefighters if they would want to stay at the dorms. That would be like, can you imagine New York taking a survey who wants ventilators in case they get sick? You have to prepare. You don't go by, show of hands, okay, there's 10 here. Okay, I guess we need 20. It's supposed to get bad. And it's right there, sitting right in the center of Hartford.
So they had this vote and it got voted down? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it wasn't a vote. That was just me using an analogy. But they said it wasn't viable. The place is a dump. But if you look it up online, you'll get the stats. But they just closed it down. 33,000 square feet just sitting there empty. So you clean it up a little bit. There's bathrooms. Mm-hmm. There's electricity. There's water. It's not pretty, but guess what? They could bring their electrical devices and watch TV and movies. And yeah, I wouldn't want to stay there, but in a pinch, these dorms, it's just a dumb idea.
If like Ann, the nurse who called us earlier, is worried about going home after her shifts this weekend and infecting her children, then she would take any reasonable alternative, Mark, and that sounds like one. Although, to be fair, if we were talking to the people who make decisions, and this is the hard thing about second-guessing this kind of decision, is they always know something that we don't. There could be one little fact in there that makes that not work. But then again, there may be no legitimate explanation. They just might have their preferences, if you know what I mean. Tom in Canton, hi.
Hey, you were talking before about Groundhog Day, and the weather has been, like, identical with a few degrees variation for the last, like, 2 months.
It was warmer 2 months ago, wasn't it?
Well, yeah.
Wasn't it? The beginning of February was balmy compared to this.
Yeah. And as far as that guy from Kentucky, whatever, worried about down there, you know, there's a certain percentage of the people that will do the complete opposite of what they're supposed to do and what they know they should do just to show they could do it and to push the buttons. And these are the guys that cause trouble for everybody else. Not that guy particularly, but I mean.
But there's also people who just have. There's some people who are slower to conform to expectations of authority, and everybody's on a spectrum on that. And
exactly,
some people are quick
exactly.
to respect.
Some people are too quick.
Yeah, some people are too quick to respect authority.
Oh, that's for sure.
And some are too slow.
I have a question I haven't heard anybody answer yet, is like from the medical people. It's like, if you get a package in the mail, what should you do with it? Is there a certain time frame you should wait? Should you spray it with chemicals? Should you put it outside, let it get cold? I'd like to know, if I order something, what should I do with it? Should I just jump it in the house? It just came out of a box truck.
I think you're supposed to spray it with disinfectant.
Well, yeah, but what about what's inside of it? You know, that's the thing.
We'll spray that, too.
So anyway, I haven't heard anybody discuss that. It would be interesting if somebody who's knowledgeable would call you and let people know. Maybe help.
Yeah, it's a good point. If you're getting something from Amazon, it might actually have been handled. The thing inside has been handled probably by somebody there, and then they pack it in a box, and that box is handled, and then it's handled by the mailman. There's so much to think about here. It's hard to be serious about this, but I think that's where we're getting, where we have to be serious like that, where we're thinking about every inch of what we do. Let's go to West Hartford now. Patrick, hello there.
Hey, Todd. Good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Thank you for the call. What's on your mind?
Just two comments. You know, as to the caller who had concerns about Kentucky, you know, the role of the government in part is to manage our finances for the welfare of the people. And that's a whole separate discussion, but also to protect the welfare and health and safety of people. There's a concept called parens patriae, which means that the government looks out for the well-being of the people. Now, when you have people that are jeopardizing the health of others and behaving in a way which is offensive, and the term will be tumultuous to other people, mm-hmm. you have to do something about it, you know, because these are extreme times. That behavior.
Yes,
but
hang on a sec. The way you do something about it, that has to still be within our, you know, acceptable in our system of government, right?
Well, yes, but you do have laws. And one of the laws, there are two laws that come to mind, sir. One is disorderly conduct, and one is a breach of the peace. That doesn't mean just yelling or screaming or fighting. That can be offensive behavior in public, which is...
such as being in public when you're not supposed to be because there's a virus.
Yeah, and potentially exposing others. And I just think that
government needs to step in, and our concerns about personal liberties, although are meritorious, at times they have to sacrifice to the well-being of others. And,
yes,
and
but I have to say, Patrick, I've been very happy that while the governor and others have been making all kinds of statements about what should happen and what they want people to do, they have been giving mostly advisories rather than taking enforcement action against people. And I think that's the better way to go as long as you possibly can. Thank you for the call, sir.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.